this call, right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So, basically, do you agree that there are heresies in Vatican II, such as non-Catholics may lawfully receive Holy Communion?
I haven't came across that, but go on. Keep going.
Well, there's so many. I mean, it esteems Islam, teaches heresy on religious liberty, it teaches that Protestants, religions are a means of salvation, it teaches that Protestants are not heretics, it teaches that the schismatic Orthodox are part of the Church, it teaches a heretical concept of collegiality, and we could go on and on. But the bottom line is that those heresies by themselves prove that people who obstinately adhere to that false counsel are ipso facto excommunicated. Now, you're of the position that there might be some problems with Vatican II, but it doesn't matter because it was not infallible, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's a complete myth, and it doesn't hold up to scrutiny. On what are you basing your conclusion that Vatican II, if they were true popes, is not infallible? And let me just make this clear before you respond, that I do not accept Vatican II, we do not accept Vatican II, it was heretical. My point is that if these guys were true popes, then it would be infallible, and that serves to prove without any doubt that they are not true popes. But go ahead and explain why you think it's not infallible.
Well, first of all, it never got the papal stamp of infallibility, Vatican II. It's the only council out of all the councils we have that haven't. So therefore, that council, actually, it was actually said that it was a pastoral council. It was never really meant to be addressed as actually part of the faith. So whatever was said in that council, whether you can translate it to be heresy, I don't know if that's your interpretation. I mean, it's very lukewarm, I can tell you that. It's like, you read it, and you're like, I really don't know what they're trying to cater to. Are they trying to cater to Protestants?
Well, let's examine some of the things you just said, because, frankly, it's not true. All right, what you just said. It's a pastoral. Let's look at your claim that it's a pastoral council. That was never stated by John the 23rd in his opening speech, which is probably what you're referring to, October 11th, 1962. What he said was that everything in this synod is to be measured in the forms and proportions of a magisterium, which is predominantly pastoral in character. That's what he said. The magisterium is infallible. And so even if we go by this quote, that would mean that Vatican II is infallible, because the magisterium is infallible.
Not necessarily. They weren't speaking in ex cathedra. It's no different than if I came up to the Pope and asked him a personal opinion, well, do you think I should use condoms? And if he tells me heresy, like, go ahead and use condoms, that doesn't make it part of the faith. And this is very similar to that, because it wasn't spoke as in part of the
faith. No, I understand what you're saying, that if a Pope says something that is not in his authoritative capacity, that it's not necessarily protected. But
exactly.
What you're saying is completely wrong. If these guys were popes, it would have been ex cathedra. And I can prove that without any doubt. But I'm just looking at your first claim. He doesn't call it a pastoral council. It's just a myth. It's untrue. He says it would reflect the Church's magisterium, which is pastoral predominantly in character. Okay? So that doesn't support the position that it's not infallible at all. Furthermore, it's irrelevant, because John the 23rd was not the man who confirmed the council. He was the man who called the council, okay? And the authority of a council is derived from the way that a pope confirms it. And if we look at the way Paul VI confirmed it, every single document of Vatican II ends with solemn language that would be ex cathedra. Are you aware of how it ends?
Yeah, but they never said, if you believe this, or if you don't believe this, then you are anathema. It never says that in this council.
It doesn't have to, because Vatican I defined that for a pope to teach infallibly, all he has to do is address faith or morals as pastor and teacher of all Christians, and in virtue of his supreme apostolic authority. He doesn't have to issue an anathema, okay? And those requirements were absolutely fulfilled. If you look at the language, here's what it says at the end of every document of Vatican II. We too, and this is Paul VI speaking, quote, by the apostolic authority conferred on us by Christ, join with the venerable fathers in approving, decreeing, and establishing these things in the Holy Spirit, and we direct that what has thus been enacted in synod be published to God's glory. I, Paul, Bishop of the Catholic Church. End quote. That's absolutely ex cathedra language, without a question. And every document of of Vatican II begins with these words: Paul, bishop, servant of the servants of God, together with the fathers of the sacred council for everlasting memory. End quote. That language is the same language that was used, for example, at the Council of Florence, at the First Vatican Council, at the Fifth Lateran Council. I'll just quote one example. This is from Eugene IV at the Ninth Session of Florence. He says, Eugene, bishop, servant of the servants of God, for an everlasting record. It's word for word the same. And what that establishes is that this decree that follows is emanating from someone who is purporting to act as pastor and teacher of all Christians. So we've got that requirement fulfilled. They do talk about faith and morals. That's just a fact. So that requirement's fulfilled. And they are promulgated in virtue of the man's so-called apostolic authority, solemnly. So that requirement's fulfilled. That's infallible. Furthermore, there's even more evidence. At the end of every document of Vatican II, Paul VI says that everything he established and was established in council is to be religiously observed by all the faithful. All the constitutions, declarations, decrees, and votes have been approved and promulgated by us with our apostolic authority. Mm-hmm. That's infallible, without a question. And here's another point. Have you ever seen or heard of the first ex cathedra definition on Outside the Church, There is No Salvation? Pope Innocent III, There is Indeed One Universal Church. You're familiar with that?
Yes.
Why is that ex cathedra?
It was part of the council. It was one of, I think it was in one of the councils.
It was in the council, the Fourth Lateran Council, okay, in 1215. But why is that ex cathedra? The language is not particularly solemn. He says, there is indeed one universal church of the faithful, outside of which no one at all is saved.
So my understanding is you're saying that pretty much if a council is spoken in the language of it being infallible, then therefore it is. See, I can't agree with that.
Let me tell you what the church teaches, okay, and what the facts of history prove, that if a council meets, okay, in an ecumenical fashion where all the bishops are called, okay, the Pope or his representatives are presiding over the council and have approved the meeting, okay, and he confirms a decree on faith or morals, that decree on faith or morals is infallible. And let me just give you an example. Do you believe the Council of Nicaea is infallible?
Yes.
Okay, why?
Because it was one of the councils. I was always taught that all the councils up until Vatican II are infallible. So
but
all the councils that were held together pretty much had the papal stamp of infallibility.
But based on your position, something can be promulgated at a council, but if a pope doesn't confirm it in a specific way, according to you, it doesn't matter, or it's not infallible.
Yeah.
Well, did you know that Pope St. Sylvester, there's no papal bull from him confirming Nicaea? All we have is the approval of his two legates, Vito and Vincent. That's it. And that was sufficient to confirm infallibly the decree on faith promulgated by the Council of Nicaea. And it was considered infallible. Leo the Great himself says no one can deviate from it.
Okay, well, I want to get to the point of why is your solution that you want to come up with this set of vacantism? Why do you think this is the solution for what's going on?
Well, we can get into that, but do you see how your position is untenable? You can't recognize these guys as popes and reject or dissent from Vatican II. If these guys are popes, Vatican II is infallible, and that's impossible because it's filled with heresies. And I could even give you more examples. I could give you numerous examples in Vatican II documents where the language directly parallels past solemn teaching. And so the bottom line is, if you think Benedict XVI's pope, if you think Paul VI was the pope, you have to accept the position that religious liberty must be a civil right, complete heresy, solemnly condemned by Pope Pius IX. You have to accept the position that non-Catholics may lawfully receive Holy Communion. You have to accept the position that the Eastern quote Orthodox who reject the papacy are in the church. You have to accept the position that Protestants are in the church and are not heretics and that their religions are means of salvation. You have to accept it. Not only...
But
go ahead.
We disagree so much on just the part of what makes a council infallible. And
well, you're just wrong. You're just flat out wrong.
But how do you, where do you get this authority from? Obviously, so, I mean, you're not the authority.
Have you been listening to any of the facts I've been quoting for you?
Yes, but the Protestants, they say the Bible there's authority, and they use that against Catholics. So I'm just saying you're using you're using writings from church fathers and popes against the church. But I'm saying you don't go outside the church, establish your own monastery, and say, okay, well, this is the Catholic Church. No, the church needs to be reformed, and I agree with you on that part, but you're doing it outside.
Well, that's not true, because the idea that the church needs reformation or restoration was condemned.
It needs it from within, not from without, just like St. Francis. St. Francis reformed the church from within. He didn't ever leave the church.
He can renew the fervor of the members, but the church itself cannot require restoration or renewal, and in fact...
Of course, I'm not talking about the faith.
Gregory XVI condemns that idea in Morari Vos.
You're talking about the faith. Well,
no, you are talking about the faith.
I'm not talking about the faith needs to be renewed. I'm talking about the people in it. The magisterium, yes, they're very lukewarm, and they're probably teaching heresy, but I'm just saying it's the people. The faith is still always there.
No, but we know you're talking about the faith because you brought that up in the context of discussing these heretical teachings. But here's the point. Your methodology is completely wrong. That our authority, okay, as Catholics, and I'm referring to those of us who are true Catholics, is what the popes have taught throughout history. That's the proximate rule of faith, okay? The Bible is not. The church's decrees, the papal decrees, tell us what the Bible means.
Yeah.
Okay, so for you to compare my correct utilization of authoritative papal teaching to privately interpreting scripture is a totally false comparison. All right? You obviously don't understand how a Catholic is to use the magisterium. And in fact, the Council of Trent, in its decree on the Sacrament of Order, said that these canons were promulgated for the use of all the faithful so that they can distinguish truth from error. Okay, but there's some bad will here, because if you were sincere, you would say, you listening?
Hold on. Hey, I'm on the phone right now. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, there's some resistance to the truth you're demonstrating, because if you were sincere, you would see, well, these facts can't be refuted. That you cannot say Vatican II is not binding without saying Nicaea was not binding when it was promulgated, or Ephesus, or Chalcedon, because the authority given to Vatican II by these so-called popes exceeds all of them. All of them. All those early councils.
It doesn't make sense to me how, I mean, you can't leave the church, though, and that's what you did.
No, actually, you're leaving the church.
How?
Because you leave the church when you embrace heresy. Do you understand ipso facto excommunication?
Not really. What does that
you
mean?
You don't? Okay, it means that when you deny a teaching of the church, you automatically incur excommunication and are expelled from the body of Christ, even without anyone making a declaration about it. So that, for example, if you tomorrow, or someone else, let's say, is baptized a Catholic and is raised a Catholic, but concludes that Jesus Christ is not God, and starts telling his friends about that position, that person has fallen into heresy and is ipso facto expelled from the church, even if no bishop pronounces it, even if no pope pronounces it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what's happened to the pro-abortion politicians and public figures who claim to be Catholic. Do you believe they're part of the church?
Not really. They're not real Catholics. But I'm just saying, I don't believe it. I don't think that non-Catholics can receive communion. Of course not. That's against church teaching.
That is the church's teaching if these guys are popes. That's the problem. That if they're popes, that is the teaching. It's been taught in the New Catechism, the New Code of Canon Law, encyclical documents, Vatican II, on and on and on. It's absolutely the teaching, these guys are popes, which it can't be.
But none of these new popes, ever since Vatican II, has exercised their papal infallibility.
That's just pure hogwash. Pure hogwash. You've been imbibing the myths of false traditionalists, which is, if you spent more time looking at the material on our site, which is well documented, you would arrive at the truth, okay? You've been drinking from the poison well of false traditionalism, where they spread these completely baseless myths that don't stand up for 1 minute. That's nonsense. I just proved to you that Vatican II itself would be infallible, okay? Paul VI says that Vatican II...
Your interpretation, though, I can interpret the same thing what you just said and be like, well, it has to just be binding on the faith by the Pope sitting on the chair of St. Peter and, you know, declaring it part of the faith. I say he has to declare it part of the faith. You say he doesn't.
No, actually, it's not my interpretation. Let me give you the proof. Benedict XVI, I'll give you his interpretation. Okay, and this is from his book, Light of the World, pages 94 to 96. And this is in reference to Vatican II's teaching that the Orthodox are part of the Church. He says, and he's asked a question, and not even a pope can offer an alternative definition of the Church? His answer, no. He has no authority over that. The Second Vatican Council is binding on him. Okay, I have a whole list of quotes here from your authorities saying that Vatican II is magisterial. Vatican II is binding. Here's another one, Ratzinger Report, page 28. It is likewise impossible to decide in favor of Trent and Vatican I, but against Vatican II. Whoever denies Vatican II denies the authority that upholds the other two councils and thereby detaches them from their foundation. So it's not my opinion only, okay? This is proven by your own anti-popes. We go on and on. Go ahead.
Where is the authority right now currently?
The chair is vacant, and this situation is predicted. Benedict XVI...
You and I both know, we understand that the Church has become, it's going to become apostasy towards the end of the time.
That's heresy, what you just said. Let me just correct that, and then you can respond. The church is indefectible, okay? It cannot become heretical. It cannot become apostate. It is infallible. It can be reduced to a remnant, and people can leave the Church and set up a counterfeit construct, but the Church itself cannot become apostate.
Okay, yeah, I agree with that. I'm talking about, what I mean by the Church is the faith will never become apostate, not the faith, but the people in it. The magisterium, the lay people, all these people, I could see a lot of a falling away from the faith in the future. And it's probably going on right now.
Probably going on right now. What planet are you on? Benedict XVI, one of the greatest heretics of all time. He denies everything. He says Matthew's gospel is historically inaccurate. He worships in synagogues. He invites idolaters to Assisi to spread their...
Not only now, we've had bad popes for thousands of years. I mean, we've had popes that have had kids. I mean, come on. I mean, the list can go on with bad popes. That doesn't affect leaving the Church and say, well, you know what? Anybody that's Roman Catholic now, they're heretics now, so we're just going to start on...
You're just not correct. You're just not correct. We've never had a situation that even remotely compares to what we're seeing now. There have never been popes who have promoted heresies like these guys, ever. Okay, and if they did, they would have lost their offices.
Can't lose your office like that.
Yes, you can. It's the teaching of canon law.
Vatican I states that the pope is infallible. So
it states that a true pope is infallible when he fulfills the requirements. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's not a true pope. He wasn't... you don't even believe that. Here, wait a second. You don't even believe that he's infallible because I just proved to you that if you really believed he's a pope and that he's infallible when he fulfills the criteria, you would have to accept Vatican II, which you don't.
Okay, interpret it in a way to where it doesn't contradict itself. So Vatican I says the pope cannot teach infallibly. Of course, teaching as an ex cathedra, that it's binding on the faith. That's what it's talking about. Not, you know, who do you think is going to win the Super Bowl? Of course not. He's not infallible on that part. It's about teaching of the faith. So therefore, these post-Vatican II popes, though obviously they weren't teaching in ex cathedra, so they didn't invalidate their papacy that way.
What are you basing that on?
So because you think that the pope is invalid because he taught heresy, and that's why you think invalidated his papacy.
That's one reason.
It's impossible.
There are two angles to this, Jose. Okay, it's important that you understand. Even if he never taught anything in an authoritative capacity, we could still prove infallibly, as sure as there is a God in heaven, that he's not the pope because he's a total apostate and heretic. And when you become a heretic, you lose membership. But we can additionally prove it by demonstrating that if he is the pope, he has done things with his so-called authority that would compromise the Church's infallibility, and that's impossible. But you say Vatican II didn't deal with faith and morals, just nonsense. Here's a quote from Paul VI, encyclical Ecclesiam Suum, 1964. It is precisely because the Second Vatican Council has the task of dealing once more with the doctrine de ecclesia, of the Church and of defining it, that it has been called the continuation and complement of the First Vatican Council, end quote. Your own anti-popes disprove what you're saying.
So tell me, what do you think the solution should be?
The solution is to accept the truth of the Catholic faith, which is that heretics are not part of the communion of the Church. Have you even seen the quotes on loss of papal office? That the Church teaches, and the saints who have addressed this issue teach, that a man who purports to be the Pope, who becomes a heretic, loses his office? Have you seen
Robert
any of those?
Bellarmine or whatever?
Not just Robert Bellarmine, St. Francis de Sales.
That's not binding on the faith, though.
No, it is. It is, because...
No, it's not.
Okay, why?
Because it's not held in council. It has to be held in council for it to be binding on the faith.
It is, actually. It's a dogmatic fact that stems directly from a dogma proclaimed in council. Okay? The Council of Florence declared as a dogma that heretics are not members of the Church.
That's true. I mean, Protestants are not members of the Church. Other heretics...
Protestants are not members of the Church. Benedict XVI says they are.
That's false. I mean, it doesn't. Like I just told you, it doesn't matter what Benedict XVI says. It matters what he declares as part of the faith.
That has been declared. That was declared in Vatican II.
It is that. Like I just said, it goes back. There's a big difference to distinguish whether Vatican II is or isn't infallible. If it is,
I just proved it. It would be. I just proved it.
With common sense about the faith. Common sense says that it has to be declared. It wasn't declared infallible. It has to, and it wasn't.
I mean, I guess you're just ignoring everything I've said, okay?
You have to be part of the faith. I mean, you can't leave the Church, and that's what you did.
No, you actually have left the Church. I mean, you know nothing about the Church. You don't understand it one bit. Let me quote it again for you, okay? You said it has to be decreed or declared. By the apostolic authority conferred on us by Christ, we join with the Venerable Fathers in approving, decreeing, and establishing these things in the Holy Spirit. Okay? And we actually have all kinds of quotes which prove that they declared this. He says the same thing in the speech closing the council. Quote after quote on this point. I just demonstrated for you that your own antipopes believe it's binding. Here's another statement from Paul VI, 1976. And he's criticizing the position of those who, quote, affirm, he's quoting Lefebvre here, it is even affirmed that the Second Vatican Council is not binding, that the faith also would be in danger because of the reforms and post-conciliar directives. He's criticizing the position that declares that the Second Vatican Council is not binding. So we have your own anti-pope saying it's binding. We have the facts of the document saying it's binding and that the language is binding. I don't know what else a person would need to see. I can give you other examples in the councils that show that Vatican II's language would be infallible. We have numerous examples on this point. And you mentioned... Go ahead.
Explain to me, how come they didn't anathemize Vatican II? How come none of the statements afterwards said, you know, if you don't believe this, then you're anathema? I mean, there has to be a reason behind that.
Because they wanted to keep a more, quote, peaceful tone so that it would be consistent with their ecumenical outreach. It would be too jarring if they anathematized anyone who didn't accept this while they're simultaneously endeavoring to join up with all the Protestant religions. And so they wanted to perpetuate, specifically the devil and Paul VI, they wanted to perpetuate the myth that Vatican II was somehow different from the previous councils to keep people like you in the counter-church.
Okay, well, I think that God intervened with this council and kept it from becoming declared as part of the faith. And I think God purposely did that because, like, I mean, you and I both agree there's some, you know, crazy things in Vatican II that, you know, it's very, like, iffy, like, well, it sounds heresy if you interpret it that way, but you can say that they're still trying to be very liberal, and it was very liberal, but I think God intervened and kept it from being an infallible council.
Well, that's just like a person closing his eyes to the evidence. I just gave you all kinds of proof that it's infallible. Here's another quote. This is just typical of the language in Vatican II. This synod decrees and declares what follows. It actually says, this synod declares and decrees what follows. This is in the decree on priests. Okay? That kind of language is throughout the council. That kind of language corresponds to what we see in Vatican I and these other councils. For example, when Vatican I is declaring the true dogmatic teaching on the papacy, it will say, "Hence the council declares." I want to quote it directly. It says, "So we teach and declare," okay? That is similar to what we have in Vatican II. And at other times, councils just say, "Hence we declare," or words of similar import. So there's no way around it. I could give you another example.
Yeah, but that "we declare," that could be just a statement of "we're saying." Another form of "this is how we're saying." You know, it doesn't mean that this is part of the faith. That's not what it means.
Yeah, it does. When it's in a decree on faith in the setting of an ecumenical council, it does. That's what I demonstrated by the Fourth Lateran Council's decree. There is indeed one universal church of the faithful. Why is that dogmatic? Pope Gregory XVI in Summo Iudiciare Studio said that's dogmatic. Why? Because it's an authoritative decree in a statement at an ecumenical council on faith. It doesn't have to say, "We declare, decree, define, proclaim, this is infallible." It doesn't have to. Okay, here's another example. This is from the decree on divine revelation in the Second Vatican Council. "This council aims then, following in the steps of the councils of Trent and Vatican I, to set forth authentic teaching on God's revelation and how it is communicated." All right, and so it's saying that it's setting forth the authentic teaching on God's revelation, following the steps of those councils. That is dogmatic language. For anyone who knows about ecumenical councils, that is dogmatic language. I could give you other examples, and some of the most interesting examples come, actually, in the Decree on Religious Liberty, which is just a travesty. It's a totally heretical document. But here's a quote from Dignitatis Humanae, number 9, the Decree on Religious Liberty. "After setting forth this disgusting teaching on religious liberty because it trashes what Pope after Pope taught on this topic, this is what the Council says: but this teaching on freedom also has its roots in divine revelation and is for that reason to be held all the more sacred by Christians." And it goes on in number 12, "Hence the Church is being faithful to the truth of the gospel and is following the way of Christ and the apostles when it sees the principle of religious freedom as in accord with human dignity and the revelation of God." That is absolutely dogmatic language in an ecumenical council setting in a decree on faith. When it's saying that this teaching is to be held as sacred, it has its roots in divine revelation, is consistent with the teaching of Christ and the apostles, and the decree begins with Paul saying, "Servant of the servants of God," and it ends with him saying, "By our apostolic authority, we decree, establish, and approve all these things." That is absolutely dogmatic if he's Pope, no doubt about it. There's no way around it.
I say it has to have the word anathema in it for it to be dogmatic.
Okay, what are you basing that on?
But the point is, you know, you don't have the authority to declare somebody heretic. I don't. Only the Church does.
So that's heresy. That's heresy.
No, you don't have that authority. I mean, the Church basically is the only way this can be solved is if the Church has a council tomorrow or whatever it's going to be, and it says, "Okay, Vatican II was a heresy, and from now on, if you believe in Vatican II, you're anathema."
That's completely wrong. What you just said, that I don't have the authority to recognize someone as a heretic, is heresy. Okay, Pope Paul IV issued a bull, Cum Ex Apostolatus Officio, stating that Catholics have the authority to acknowledge a heretic as not the Pope, even if he's elected by the cardinals, without any declaration. That's Catholic teaching. Directly the opposite of what you just said. St. Robert Bellarmine says the same thing. He says they can reject this guy as a heretic before any excommunication or judicial sentence. Leo XIII says the practice of the Church has always been the same, to hold as outside the communion of the Church people who dissent from the authoritative teaching of the magisterium. And you do it yourself because you regard pro-abortion public figures who claim to be Catholic as outside the Church.
Well, that's
And so I just have to say, I think you're a bad will. I think you're a bad will person, because if you were of goodwill, you would say, "Well, this makes a lot of sense. I can't respond to this. These are the facts." And see, it's your pride, because like you wanted to engage us on this because you thought you were right, and you're completely wrong.
Okay, well, you're familiar with Michael Morris, right? And he sees it very similar like I do. You know, he's not pro Vatican II. He doesn't agree with everything he said there, but however, he does something totally different than you guys do. He's still part of the faith, and he tries to fix it within, and that's what you guys should do.
No, I
would love to do that, too. I mean, I don't have authority to talk to bishops or anything like that, but the faith is still there. The Eucharist is still the body of Christ. The confession is still confession, but you sit there and you leave it, and I don't even know if you're in communion with Rome, so I don't know if you're... You know, Eucharist is valid or anything, so...
You're very confused, Jose. Have you seen the video that I did called the Michael Voris Deception?
Yes, and you just said he was a heretic because he accepted the papacy.
Wait a second, no. There's an hour of documentation. That video thrashes him.
No, I've been watching him for a while, and everything is very orthodox, what he teaches. It's
very orthodox.
You know,
okay, that's why he promotes the joint declaration with the Lutherans on justification. He promotes it. He has a video about it. I quote it in the video. Do you know what that teaches? It teaches justification by faith alone is true.
Yeah, but the Pope never put that binding on the faith.
Wait a second. Okay, that's not true, actually. Both Benedict XVI and John Paul II said that the joint declaration with the Lutherans was, quote, approved by the Catholic Church. But regardless, it's heretical. Martin Luther didn't bind the faithful, but he was a heretic. Okay, so right there, that's a clear heresy promoted by Voris, Protestantism. He also is a total deceiver. He gives the impression that Benedict XVI is against the false ecumenism when we prove that he embraces and exemplifies the very type of false ecumenism Voris claims to denounce. For example, Voris claims to denounce the idea that these non-Catholics don't need to embrace the Catholic faith. And he gives the impression that Benedict XVI is on his side. It's a total lie, total deception. Benedict XVI teaches that they don't need conversion. Okay, we go through all the things about Voris. Voris even says that people who use artificial contraception might not be guilty of mortal sin.
Well, you understand what mortal sin, you have to have full knowledge, full consent. I mean,
and sufficient.
Sometimes people don't know what they're doing, but it's still a sin. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's okay. Of course it's still a sin, but mortal sin is different.
No, if you, do something like that, that act is grave matter. And to engage in it requires full consent of the will. In other words, you can't perform the act without giving full consent of the will to it. It's inherent in the act. And so that is ipso facto a mortal sin. That's the teaching. That's the teaching of Pope Pius XI, the Casta Canubi. That's why he says anyone who indulges in this activity is branded. It's like a stamp. You are stamped with the guilt of mortal sin. Okay, he says people can do this and not be guilty of mortal sin. That's heresy.
But you forgot one part, is full knowledge. A lot of these people, some of them don't have...
No, there are certain actions, you're not listening, there are certain actions that involve by themselves full knowledge, okay? For example, someone gets drunk, okay? They're committing mortal sin.
Yeah.
All right? Period. That's the teaching of the church. It's not like, well, they didn't think enough about mortal sin before they got drunk. If they actually deliberately got drunk, or if they deliberately used artificial contraception, it's a mortal sin. He's saying someone can deliberately use artificial contraception and somehow be in good faith. That's just one example. I mean, there are tons of heresies on this guy. He believes in salvation outside the church. I mean, that video absolutely proves it. He's just an instrument of Satan to mislead and deceive people like you. That's all he is.
You think that the Novus Ordo is invalid too, right?
It's definitely invalid. But let me ask you this. Do you believe, here's the one of the root problems that many people like you have. Do you believe non-Catholics can be saved, like Jews and Muslims?
No, they can't. But however, let me elaborate on this.
Yeah, here we go.
Outside the church, you cannot be saved. But out of invincible ignorance, you can. Not through your faith. Not like a Jew can be saved through his Judaism. Of course not. You know, but it's through invincible ignorance. God is not going to judge somebody on something he did not know, or he didn't even get a chance to know. So,
So you do believe Muslims and Jews can be saved? The answer to the question is yes.
Yes, but I've said there's elaboration to that. I mean, the church even teaches
okay,
that.
Okay, no, the church doesn't teach that. That's heresy. The church teaches that all the pagans, all the Jews, all heretics and all schismatics go to hell unless they have the Catholic faith. It's also a dogma that you must believe in Jesus Christ and the Holy Trinity.
Yes, but what about those people that didn't have a chance to at all?
The church teaches that they are left in darkness and outside the faith of Christ because they were not among the elect. That's the teaching of the church.
Yeah, but obviously they're not going to be damned.
Yes, they are. Have you even read Pope Eugene IV's dogmatic definition on this issue?
No, what does it say?
Well, see, this is inexcusable. If you're going to try to correct others about these things, and you're not even familiar with this landmark, this extremely important document on salvation, and you're presuming to challenge what we're saying on salvation, he says that the church declares that Holy Roman Church firmly believes, professes, and teaches that all those outside the Catholic Church, not only pagans, but also Jews, heretics, and schismatics, cannot become participants in eternal life, but will depart into the everlasting fire unless before the end of their lives they have been added to the Church, and that no one, even if he shed his blood for the name of Christ, can be saved,
okay,
unless
he
abide within the bosom. You don't agree with that.
What about that? No, I do agree with that, but what about the part that you don't agree with, which is invincible ignorance? You totally left that part out. What about invincible ignorance?
He doesn't say anything about invincible ignorance. There's nothing.
I can find it on the computer and find where it says that outside the church. You can't be saved except through invincible ignorance.
I'm very familiar with this issue, okay? And what you're trying to quote is from Pius the Ninth, okay? And there are two statements in particular that people generally bring up, and neither one of those teaches what you're saying, okay? The one says that the people who are in invincible ignorance are not going to be held guilty in that matter in the eyes of the Lord. Wait a second, that's true, because the church teaches that the people who are left outside the church are damned for their other mortal sins. It doesn't mean they can be saved. They can't. It's a dogma that you must believe in Jesus Christ. That's a dogma, okay? And the other statement says that people who are in invincible ignorance, if they sincerely seek out God, will, by the operating power of divine light and grace, be led to eternal life. Divine light and grace is a phrase in the New Testament for accepting the gospel. So that's what he's saying. Okay, and Father Michael Mueller, actually, who was writing at the time, and I don't agree with everything he said, but he made some good points on this matter. He pointed out that this idea that people can be saved who are invincibly ignorant is wrong. It's not what Pius IX was teaching. Furthermore, the statements of Pius IX were less authoritative than the statement of Eugene IV, which is absolutely infallible. But here's the thing. If a person doesn't gravitate toward truth, which unfortunately at this time you don't, you'll never embrace the truth because there's too much bad will operating. And so you're also dishonest. If you were more honest, you would admit you do believe Jews and Muslims can be saved.
I just told you no, except through invincible ignorance. Which
means they can be saved. Which means they can be saved, according to you.
But that's what you just quoted the Pope that said that, where you – what did you say, Pope Leo, or I forgot, but you said –
Pius the Ninth.
Pius the Ninth. You just said that, invincible ignorance.
But he's not saying, okay, that they can be saved in it, in those documents. He's not saying that. He's saying that they're not held guilty in that manner, which is true. That's what – even the saints who absolutely believed all the people who are ignorant are lost pointed out that they are lost for their other sins. They're not lost for rejecting the gospel if they've never heard of it. They're lost for their dishonesty in their lives, for their sexual sins, for their idolatry, for worshiping things that are clearly not divine. That's why they're damned.
About some will be judged according to their conscience and some will be judged according to the law. That sounds very similar to that too.
What he's saying is that the natural law is written on everyone's heart. And that's why God can condemn those pagans to hell, even though they've never heard of him, because they are committing sins against the natural law. And actually, all the missionaries, okay, the missionaries to South America, the missionaries to North America, the missionaries to Asia, all the traditional missionaries believe the opposite of what you believe. They believe that all these pagans, if they were not reached with the gospel of Jesus Christ, are lost, because that's the teaching of the church. And if invincible ignorance can save someone who's not heard of Jesus, well, what if he's heard a little bit about Jesus?
Then he's rejecting it.
So wait a second. How much does he have to know?
I mean, we can't determine that, obviously.
Right, and so basically what you're saying is it's possible for someone who's even heard of Jesus but hasn't heard a good argument for him could be saved.
Probably not necessarily.
You see, you don't know because your position is heretical, and what you're doing is actually reducing the meaning of the dogma to a meaningless formula. Exactly what Pius XII said in his statement in Humani Generis, which was correct, that these people who adopt this idea, which you hold, are reducing the truth of the church, which has been defined, to a meaningless formula.
But this whole argument, you've been quoting so much, but it doesn't get down to the point to why, you know, you reject the papacy.
I don't. You reject the papacy. Don't ever say I reject the papacy. You reject the papacy. You do. If you see, you're very confused. You're very blind. You're very blind. I wonder if you've even prayed a 15-decade rosary in your life. Probably not. Okay? You're very blind. And so you. The papacy is not just. Do you know we've had anti-popes in church history?
Yes, but there was, every time we had an anti-pope, there was always a true pope out there.
That's not true. It's just wrong. Okay? There were times, such as during the Great Western Schism, where the true pope would die, and there would be no true pope, but there would be an anti-pope.
But they always resolved the issue, though.
They eventually resolved the issue, but not until there was massive confusion. There were three claimants at one time during the Great Western Schism, and even the true pope was the weakest of the three in terms of the number of followers he had.
Well, let me have my talk, my little share on what I think about Vatican II and what happened. I mean, you can whatever butt in anytime you want and let me know, but this is basically what happened. So during Vatican II, I think there was Freemasons involved in there. So I think Freemasons entered the church. And that was even predicted by saints like 100 years before. They said Satan's going to enter the church and he's going to come through an organization. And so I think the Freemasons went into Vatican II. They tried the best what they can do to mess up the faith, but the faith is never going to get.
Well, listen. Your opinions about what happened are meaningless.
Like yours are just opinions too, because you don't have.
Okay, give me an example of something I've said that's my opinion that I can't back up.
Because all those documents you've been quoting is also your interpretation. So it's like a Protestant can interpret a Bible to me.
No, I've already explained to you that there's a distinction between the Bible and the magisterium. That the magisterium is our proximate rule of faith. That's what we use. That's what we go by. Okay. And furthermore, the interpretation I'm giving you is the interpretation of your own antipopes. They agree with me that it's binding. I quoted you statement after statement, but you just don't want to hear the truth because you're a liar. You're just a liar.
So what is your advice?
My advice to you is you need to start praying the full rosary each day. You need to more carefully look at the information in our material, not Michael Voris's garbage. And it's actually amazing that he has so many followers. It shows how bad-willed people are because his stuff is such empty garbage. I mean, he has some true things to say, but in terms of his conclusions about the church, it's just absurd. And anyone who sees the video that we did on him, it absolutely destroys his claims. It proves that the guy's a total deceiver. Benedict XVI's on the warpath against modernism. Benedict XVI denies everything, everything. He says the gospel is inaccurate. He says Jews can be saved. He says Protestants don't need conversion. He says the Orthodox are in the church. All right, here's a simple point. Vatican I teaches that if you reject the papacy, you're outside the church. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Does Benedict XVI teach that?
But it doesn't matter if he said anything about it or not.
No, it does, because
you have to respect the faith from the whole, not just from each individual pope. You can't just sit there and, you know, individually judge a pope. No, you take the whole entire faith. That's what I'm doing. I'm taking the whole entire thing.
No. The saints of the church and the doctors point out that if you have a guy who claims to be pope who is departing from the faith, he must be rejected as a heretic and an anti-pope.
I know you quoted that before, but like I said, it's not binding on the faith.
No, it is, because here's the thing. It's heresy to believe that a heretic's a member of the church. That is binding on the faith. If you believe a heretic is a member of the church, you deny the faith. Benedict XVI is a heretic. It's that simple. Therefore, the only conclusion that you could come to is he's not the Pope. He's not in the church. He can't lead the church. Just like pro-abortion politicians leave the church. Just like you, unfortunately, leave the church by defending people who promote heresy. Just like Boris, Michael Voris leaves the church because he promotes justification by faith alone.
But the Pope never loses his authority that way.
Yes, canon law teaches that a publicly heretical cleric loses his authority without any declaration. Canon 188.4.
How many popes have been heretics and excommunicated from the church already?
There's only been one valid pope before the Vatican II anti-popes. Okay, who aren't valid popes. But in terms of the valid popes in church history, Honorius was the only one denounced as a heretic. Okay.
And could it be possible, though, that even though these popes are bad will, bad intention, could it still be that they still have the authority to the office that they do hold?
No.
No, it's not possible.
Not possible. It's impossible. I can tell you infallibly, they don't have it. They don't have it, okay?
But what if this pope never speaks infallibly?
It doesn't matter. Even if he never did, I can tell you infallibly, he doesn't have it. He's not a Catholic. He's no more a Catholic than the Dalai Lama. If you think he's Catholic, you frankly, once you've seen the evidence, you spit in the face of Jesus Christ.
But that's just like saying, I've had people, you know, I've argued with people saying, oh, you confess your sins to a priest, but what if he's a child molester? What if he does this? What if he's a heretic? Blah, 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 whatever. I'm like, well, he still has that authority to, you know, to absolve me. He still has the authority to consecrate the body and blood of Christ, just like the Pope has the authority to still be Pope.
That's a false analogy, because the priestly character is an indelible mark. There are three sacraments that give an indelible mark: baptism, confirmation, holy orders.
Yeah.
But an office of the church, okay, can be lost. The mark of the priesthood, assuming the guy's validly ordained, cannot be lost. An office or membership in the church can be lost through heresy.
Okay, but the sacraments are still valid, so why do you have
Wait
to
a second, that's a broad statement. Which sacraments?
Pretty much the body in Christ.
No, the body and blood of Christ is not present at the Novus Ordo. But that's a separate issue. It's not...
That's separate, yeah.
But he's not a pope. Even if he had the most reverent Latin masses in the world, he wouldn't be pope. It wouldn't make any difference. He's not a Catholic. Do you realize he teaches that the Orthodox... Do you know who the Orthodox are?
Yeah, the Eastern Church.
Right. Do you believe that they're in or out of the church?
They're schismatic. They're illicit, basically.
Okay.
See, their sacraments are valid.
Wait a
they
second.
They are valid, but the thing is, they're not in communion with Rome, so therefore...
Are they inside the church, or are they outside the church?
They're outside the church.
Okay. He teaches the opposite. He teaches that they're inside the church.
Well,
do you believe me on that?
You have to understand which way he's talking about it, though. I mean, I can understand it's totally different than the Protestants. The Eastern Orthodox are totally different than the Protestants, because they're actually...
No, they're not.
They're the same faith. They have a valid priesthood. They have a valid patriarch. I mean, their clergy is valid. Their sacraments are valid. So why are they outside the church?
Because they're heretics. They deny the papacy.
Well, you deny the papacy.
No, I don't. No, I don't. It's just a lie.
Well, then, I think you're in denial about the papacy, because...
You don't have any idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, but Christ is not going to leave his church.
Christ what?
Christ will not leave his church.
I agree. That doesn't mean that the church cannot be reduced to a remnant. Okay? That doesn't mean that anti-popes cannot lead people astray into a counter-church that calls itself Catholic but actually isn't. That's what you're part of. You're part of actually the counter-church.
So, but the thing is, I don't even go to the Novus Ordo Mass. I go, you know...
But wait a second. This is one thing I noticed... And we've noticed when talking to so many people like you, is that because you're, I have to say in charity, in a spiritual fog, that the devil will not allow you to grasp the simple points. He'll shift your attention immediately away when you begin to hit on a truth. And when I pointed out to you about the Orthodox, how they're outside the church, which you agreed, you said they're outside the church. And then I said, does Benedict XVI believe they're outside the church? And then I proved that he believes they're inside the church. You just said, well, you have to understand what he means by that. No, he's saying they're in the church. He not only says they're in the church, but he says that that position is binding. Do you see the problem?
According to you, you're taking everything that what the popes are saying as binding of the faith, and
no,
I don't.
Even if it's not binding, okay, forget the binding consideration. It's heresy. He says that the Orthodox are in the church. Do you agree that's heresy?
Yeah, I agree that's heresy. But
okay, someone who teaches heresy is a heretic.
Yes, I understand, but it's a totally different argument as if it's binding on the faith.
No. Okay, we can prove it's binding, but that's irrelevant. That if he's a heretic, you agree he's a heretic?
Well, from your interpretation, I'll say yes, but I can interpret it a different
heretics,
way.
Well,
he's meaning something else.
The
so,
church teaches. No, you can't interpret it another way. You can't. It's just a lie. You can't. Okay, there's nothing to prove it. Okay, we have all this documentation to prove exactly that. He proclaims that the leaders of the Orthodox are in the church. Okay, the Code of Canon Law explains what the meaning of a particular church is, and Dominus Iesus and Benedict XVI say that these Orthodox individuals are particular churches, which means local segments of the true church. So you can't explain it away. So you shouldn't say things that aren't true. You can't. Jesus says you'll be held accountable for every idle word. So you can't just say things to try to win an argument or to try to respond if you don't know they're true. It's not true. Okay, so stop saying it. All right, so he teaches that they're in the church. That's heresy. He's a heretic. Heretics are outside the church. Do you realize that?
I know. You quoted that before.
Okay, so is he outside the church?
Who, Benedict XVI?
Yeah.
No, he's still Pope.
No, I didn't ask you that. I asked you, is he outside the church?
No.
But so he's a heretic, but he's not outside the church?
But like I told you before, he could speak however he wants, but that doesn't invalidate his papacy. And I know you've quoted things before that does say that, but it doesn't cut it like
well,
that.
Well, you just refuse to accept the truth.
Okay, for example, so do you agree that Satan entered the church and tried to pretty much change it? That's what Vatican II was.
I would not phrase it that way, because when you typically talk about the church, you're talking about the church's official teachings and the actual organization of the church.
No, not that. The people in it, though.
I would say that Satan, okay, spread an apostasy that caused many people to leave the church,
yes,
and follow heretical priests and so-called bishops, and he constructed a counterfeit church, which purports to be Catholic but isn't. And the reason it's counterfeit, the reason it has left the Catholic Church, the reason you are following an entity which is actually not the Catholic Church, but has left the Catholic Church, is because the guys who kicked it off, who kick-started it, John the 23rd and Paul the 6th, were anti-Pope infiltrators. Okay, so what you're following are two men, just like people who are following the anti-Popes in the Great Western Schism, who purported to have papal authority but didn't. And so nothing of what they do is protected, and that's why they teach so many heresies. And this vast structure has dominated, but it was started under these anti-popes, whereas the true church still exists, but in the remnant of Catholics who maintain the traditions of the faith. And this whole deception is predicted. Jesus says that the great apostasy, okay, will be so profound that even the elect would be deceived if that were possible, that this deception would center around the holy place, okay, the holy place. And St. Paul says the same thing about how there will be false signs and wonders. And that's what you're dealing with. And the doctrinal facts prove it. But see, someone who loves Jesus Christ at all would be repulsed by John Paul II and Benedict XVI. Absolutely repulsed.
But you're declaring me as a heretic, even though I don't agree with all those teachings that you've been saying that are heretical. I don't agree with that. I pretty much go to Mass every Sunday at a traditional Mass, but, like, you sit there and you still label me as a heretic, so...
Yeah, you're a heretic for a number of reasons. Number one, you believe Jews and Muslims can be saved.
But I just told you what I thought about that. They're outside the church. They can't, but, however...
But they can. They can't, but they can. That's a lie. Let your yes be yes, let your no be no.
They're walking on really thin ice. Even Protestants could go to heaven. I mean, they're walking on thin ice, but not through their faith. You don't know how God was going to judge them.
Well, truth is meaningless to you. If I can prove, which I have, that Pope Eugene IV declares all the Jews and the pagans and the heretics are lost, and you say Jews can be saved, that's heresy, Jose. It's heresy. That doesn't mean Jews can't be saved, but actually they can be saved by invincible ignorance. No. There are no exceptions mentioned in any of the dogmatic definitions, and there are at least seven. There are at least seven dogmatic pronouncements on outside the church there's no salvation. There are no exceptions mentioned in any of them. In fact, all exceptions are positively excluded. The language is no one, no one at all, every human creature, okay? Nobody. That's the language. And so for you to... Go ahead.
From your movement that you're trying to start right now, it's very similar to what Martin Luther was doing. What Martin Luther did, he did see a problem in the church, and there was a problem in the church. There were people selling...
Actually, no, you agree with Luther.
No, I don't.
You do, because you promote people like Voris, who promotes Luther's heresy of faith alone.
Well, hold on, let me finish my statement, though, on Luther. So Luther saw what was going on in the church, and it was wrong, and you're seeing what's going on in the church, and you see, obviously, it's wrong, but what are you doing very similar to what Luther's doing? You're breaking away from the church, and you're saying, well, you know what? The true church is over here with me.
You don't have any idea what you're talking about. You don't have any idea about what the church is. Do you understand that the church is not the buildings? Do you understand that?
I understand that. It's the hierarchy. It's the people in charge of it.
It's the true faithful, not people who claim to be Catholic. It's people who actually are. Benedict XVI praises Luther. John Paul II praised Luther. They agreed with Luther on justification. It's precisely because I reject Luther that I reject them.
So,
they teach that Lutherans are part of the church. That's in the Decree on Ecumenism, that all the people born in these communities cannot be accused of the sin of separation.
Yeah, but I don't, like I just told you, I don't...
And so you're so blind, like, and it's because you're a liar. Because
I don't agree with the heretical stuff like that. That's what I'm saying, but I'm receiving all the sacraments, so what are you saying? I'm still a heretic?
You're not receiving the sacraments. You're receiving nothing but a piece of bread that people think is the body of Christ. It's not.
Like I just told you, I'm not going to the... I go to the Novus Ordo Mass every once in a while, but for the most part, I go to the traditional Mass. You're saying that's
so,
not...
So, okay, well, it depends. Is the priest who celebrates the traditional Mass older or younger?
Younger.
Yeah, he's ordained the new rite of ordination, which parallels the Anglican rite in terms of what it was deleted from it, the references to the sacrificing priesthood, the same things that the Anglicans deleted, okay? The prayers were deleted from the new rite of ordination, and because those things were deleted, Pope Leo XIII declared in Apostolice Curae that the Anglican rite of ordination is invalid. So on the same grounds, the new rite is invalid. In fact, I'm totally convinced that the new rite of ordination is invalid. Definitely.
So you're saying it doesn't matter if they're ordained by an official bishop as long as the ordination...
No, because here's the thing. You probably don't even know basic sacramental theology. And I say that because if you're going to say that someone's wrong, and as you are, you know, it's inexcusable for you not to know these things. But do you understand how a sacrament is valid or why and the elements that are required?
Yeah, it has to be performed by a valid priesthood, and it has to be actually consecrated the correct way. I mean,
you have to have matter, form, minister, and intention. Okay, like in baptism, the matter is the water, the form are the words.
Yeah.
Okay, the minister is the person baptizing. If you substantially alter any of those things in a corrupting way, the sacrament is invalid. Okay, so you can have a bishop who's valid, but if he's using a mutilated rite and the words aren't proper, then the form is wrong.
So you're saying after Vatican II they changed it, or what?
Yes, they changed everything. They have a new rite of ordination, okay, a new mass, a new catechism, a new code of canon law, because it's a new religion. It's the new counterfeit religion.
Okay, but I would say that, you know, the authority still... I mean, for example, the Pope had the authority to change the words if he chose to. That's what I agree with.
No. Pius X even pointed out that the church has no power over the substance of the sacraments. He proclaimed that in ex quo, because they were instituted by Christ. Okay, so the church itself cannot even change those essential elements of the sacraments. The church can't change the faith. And those essential elements of the sacraments, what Christ himself decreed to be preserved in a sacramental sign, are unchangeable. All right?
Yeah, but... The meaning is still there when the consecration is happening. So
well, we're switching issues here. We were talking about the rite of ordination. Now you're talking about the Eucharist.
Okay,
but the meaning
we'll
is not there.
The
meaning is not there in the Eucharist either, for the new so-called Eucharist. It's not.
So you're saying for me to be in communion with God, I need to break away from the Roman rite and what?
Because you know, you need to break away from the new rite and invalid priests who were ordained in Paul VI's new phony rite. But most importantly, even if you did all that, even if you went to the most reverent traditional mass in the world, you wouldn't please God at all because you reject what he has revealed. And so when you reject what he has revealed, you sever the initial connection to God. And so anything else you do is basically worthless in his sight. That's what we see in the Old Testament. He will hear your prayers if you sincerely pray to find the truth. But in terms of all the effort you put out, it's worthless, meaningless to him, because you are spitting in his face by resisting what he has said. So when he says that you must believe in me, have you ever read the New Testament?
Yeah.
Okay, do you know how many times Jesus says you have to believe in him? That you can't get to heaven without him? He says it over and over again. Yet you're saying that someone who disbelieves in Jesus could get to heaven. That's not only contrary to the clear words of Scripture, but the Council of Florence, the Athanasian Creed, all these dogmatic pronouncements. It's blatant heresy.
So, but, you know, you're familiar with that doctrine of, what was I going to say? I lost my train of thought. But, no, there's a, okay, in the Bible it also states that Jesus says the gates of hell will not prevail against my church. And, so are you trying to say that the Roman Rite, basically the gates of hell, did prevail against the
no.
Catholic Church? Or?
No, I'm not, because, as I said earlier, the organization we're talking about is a pseudo-organization. It's not the church. And so whatever it does, it could say anything, it could do anything, it does not impact what the church does, because the men who kick-started it were invalid anti-popes. And so it's basically like this. John the 23rd, okay, left the Catholic Church. He was a heretic. But he purported to get himself elected pope. The election was invalid because he was a heretic, and also there's evidence he wasn't even elected, that the whole thing was rigged. And so he started this new structure. Okay, so if you have the Catholic Church on the left, and then you have this new structure that John the 23rd is now leading on the right. He's an invalid anti-pope, even though a lot of people think he's pope. So a lot of people start following him. They start to move from the left to the right, okay? And they really follow him and move from the left to the right when this organization becomes more wild and wacky and embraces false religions and embraces Protestantism and teaches ecumenism and changes the rites, okay? And more people go on along with this and they reject Catholic teaching. So they're leaving the left side and moving to the right. And they think they're the Catholic Church. They're calling this organization the Catholic Church. It's not. It's this counterfeit church. Whereas the true church on the left is still there, but it's been reduced in size. Only the people who adhere to the traditional faith are still part of it. And so you have this massive deception where the people think that this organization on the right, okay, led by John the 23rd and then his successor in invalidity, anti-Pope Paul VI, they think these guys are the popes, and they're not. They're just part of this counter-church. And that, we believe, is the Whore of Babylon. Even if you don't believe that, but it demonstrates that this concept, okay, has some favor in Catholic tradition and in Scripture and in Catholic prophecy.
Okay, I'll give you, I'll say John 23rd, I'll give you that, say, okay, well, he's a valid pope. But the guy after him was Paul VI. Was he validly elected by the College of Cardinals or no?
No. Not only is there evidence that there was fraud in the election, but the church teaches that a heretic cannot be validly elected. That's the teaching of the true church. Okay, Pope Paul IV issued a bull on that. And so his election was invalid, and the heresies the guy promoted were absolutely astounding. He said, Islam is a faith that binds us to the one God. He says we shouldn't convert Protestants. He even said about a pagan temple that the images, okay, communicate wisdom. He praised the non-Christian religious. I mean, the guy was just a pure devil. He actually wore the breastplate of a Jewish high priest. There are all kinds of pictures of that. He's a total conspirator. So he was invalid. And then John Paul I was invalid. And John Paul II was a manifest heretic and far worse. And he was invalid. And Benedict XVI, so you're following the counter-structure. That's what you're doing. But the deception is that you think it's Catholic.
No, what I think by people are going to be led astray that you were talking about earlier is not people like me. There's people out there that are lukewarm Catholics that will believe what popes like that are saying. They'll believe, you know, they'll see them, oh, well, it's okay to go to a Jewish synagogue because so-and-so did it. No, I'm not one of those people. I know that that's heresy. But however, the church is still going to be there till the end of time, and it's still, I say it's still the church, but obviously you're going to say, well, that's not the Catholic Church anymore. It moved over.
Does the Catholic Church teach heresy?
What was that again?
Does the Catholic Church teach heresy?
No, it doesn't.
Does that church of Benedict XVI teach heresy?
Yes, but like I told you before, it's not fine.
Okay, it's just logic. If the Catholic Church doesn't teach heresy, his church does. It's not the Catholic Church.
But like I said, everything that they're talking about that is heresy, you're saying that they're saying it's binding on the faith, but it's not. It's not.
Okay, according to you, even though we can prove it theologically, even though you have no support in tradition for what you're saying is blown away by the facts of what is infallible and binding in Catholic teaching. It's blown away by what they say about it. I mean, it's absurd. You're just hanging on to nothing more than a myth. It's like believing in a fairy tale. And it's all because you savor the things of external community rather than the things of God. What really attracts your attention is showing up at a building, meeting with people, thinking that you've got this structure, not what Jesus Christ himself taught. You're not really attracted to Christ. You're attracted to man.
How do you know? You don't know if I fast on Fridays. You don't know if I pray the rosary daily. You don't know if I, you know, give up a lot of sacrifices. How do you know if I'm doing all that?
It doesn't matter. I didn't say that, actually. What I said is, by your refusal to adhere to Catholic teaching, you prove that you're of bad will.
I don't know. It's just going to always go back to the same argument.
That's because you're a liar, and people like you, okay, you could argue with for years. And unless you pray and start to be honest, it's pointless. And see, there's a lot of pride there, though, because you really, and I have to say this in charity and in the interest of your salvation, you don't know almost anything about Catholic teaching, almost nothing. And that you're trying to correct us, and we've obviously looked into this stuff, and we can back up what we're saying. And so there's a blindness there that you would say, well, maybe I should familiarize myself with this. See, God resists the proud and gives his grace to the humble.
The only way you can declare people like me, what you say that are post-Vatican II Catholics, as heretics, is if the church itself held a council and actually said that people that believe in this or that's part of this sect is actually a heresy.
That's just heresy.
That's the only way. No, that's the only way. You can't determine.
Okay, where does the church teach that?
It's a common sense thing about Catholicism.
No, you just declared that falsehood on your own authority. It's based on nothing but your own authority. I can prove what Catholic authority teaches, that you can reject as heretical individuals who have not been declared. Pope Paul IV teaches it in his bull Cum Ex Apostolatus Officio. Okay? Pope Leo XIII teaches it in Satis Cognitum. Okay? Pope Pius IX in his decree and declaration on the old Catholics says that they must be regarded as non-Catholics. Not all of them have been declared. That's Catholic teaching. Not what you said.
So basically, you're saying that the individual has the right to declare somebody a heretic, right?
An individual has not only the right, but the obligation to recognize as heretical and heretics people who obstinately dissent from the teaching of the magisterium. If that were not true, you'd have no external unity at all. There are people who claim to be Catholic, okay, at so-called Catholic universities all over the world, who deny Scripture, who deny Jesus Christ's deity, who teach the most ridiculous things about Christianity. According to you, they have to be considered true Christians, true Catholics. That is blasphemy.
Yeah, but that is
idiocy.
Yeah, but that stuff that you just mentioned, like Christ is deity and all that stuff, that was already declared in council. This Vatican II heresy hasn't been declared in council.
Well, wait a second here. There's a fundamental flaw in your argument. So you're admitting that people who embrace things that a council has considered heretical can be considered heretics without a declaration. Correct? So that you're saying that an individual can be considered a heretic without a declaration if the position he holds has already been addressed.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Benedict XVI, the position he holds that the people who reject the papacy are in the church has been declared heretical. So he can be considered a heretic without a declaration.
Okay. Well, I don't know.
And see, and that's the thing, that you don't have the internal grace of faith yet. I hope you get it. But you need to pray. You need to look at this. You need to look at the material on our site, because you're going to find the truth when you look at that, because it cuts through the lies. If you're drinking from the well of heretics like Voris, you're just going to be deceived. There's truth mixed with lies and actually just pure evil, because he's saying that the men who attack Christ's faith are actually defending it. It's satanic, actually. And he's just an instrument of Satan.
From your point, do you receive any sacrament from you know, your order that you're in or anything like that? What order are you in? You obviously you're not in the Roman, right? So
we're traditional Catholic Benedictine monks.
Okay, but I mean, your order is it valid? Because obviously there's a big difference if it's valid and invalid. So I'm just saying.
Yes. Yes, but I think what you may be asking is, do we have valid priests? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, valid priests.
We don't have a priest.
So you're basically saying it's better to do what you're doing. You're outside the church. You're not receiving the sacrament.
I'm not outside the church. Okay, I'm not.
Well, you're not in a valid order. You have to be in a valid order.
Yes.
Christ established that.
Yes, we are in a valid order.
Well, you're not in communion with Rome, so it's not valid.
Oh, boy. I mean, I guess you haven't understood anything I've said to you.
Yeah, but...
Being in communion with Rome means being in communion with the true popes. There have been anti-popes who have ruled in Rome.
True, but...
So let me ask you the question. Were the people who were rejecting the anti-pope in Rome out of communion with Rome in the past?
No, but I think that issue was a totally different issue.
No, so you therefore, rejecting the guy in Rome on the basis that he's not a true pope is not being out of communion with Rome in terms of Catholic Rome. No, it's not, or the Church of Rome. It's not. So
okay, but at that time,
you're too attached. You don't understand that there can be a deception. The buildings can be taken over. In the Arian crisis in the 4th century, almost all the bishops became Arian. So the people who were worshiping at their diocese, okay, the diocese was overtaken by a heretical bishop all over the empire. And so you would have said, you know, the people who reject these heretical bishops are outside of the church and outside of the communion of the church. And you would have been opposing St. Athanasius and the remnant Catholics. So you would have been on the side of the devil then, and you're on the side of the devil now.
Let me address on that issue right there. That's actually a good point right there, because during that time when everything was Arian, obviously there was Athanasius that believed in the divinity of Christ and everything, but at that time, before it was addressed in council, those sacraments that they were receiving were valid.
Sacramental, this is an example of your confusion. Sacramental validity is a totally separate issue from heresy.
Okay, but I'm just saying that. But it's still important to receive the sacraments. It keeps you away from sin. I mean, it's...
I do receive the sacraments on occasion.
Okay, but the thing is, during this time, before the issue was addressed... Okay, let me ask you this personal question. Those Arians, before they had that council that says, okay, if you're believing what Arianism is believing, then you're a heretic. But before they had that council, do you think those people were heretics?
Yes, because in the case of Arianism... It is an essential denial of a truth of faith. It denies an essential mystery of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And true. And you cannot be erring in good faith on that topic. And so,
that's after the council was held, because they did not know.
Now, wait a second. You asked me if someone who denies, okay, the deity of Christ or embraces Arianism before the council was a heretic? The answer is yes.
In a sense, yes, but however, they didn't have full knowledge, so they're not fully...
No, they did, because you don't understand the distinction. And this, again, you don't know what you're talking about. That's just the truth.
Like I said,
here's the thing. There's a distinction between, you don't have to have a positive knowledge of every single mystery of faith or every single teaching of the church, but you have to know what are called the essential mysteries of faith. All right? No exceptions. That's why no one can be saved without faith in Christ. You must know the Trinity and the Incarnation. And so even if you've never been taught the truth about the Trinity or the Incarnation, if you come to adopt a clear heresy against those truths, such as that there are four gods, okay, or such as that Jesus Christ is not true God, you leave the Church of Christ. Even if you've never studied the Council of Nicaea, it doesn't matter, because that's an essential mystery of faith. That's, by the way, also why Benedict XVI and John Paul II could not be material heretics. That's just one reason, because they embrace things that are contrary to essential mysteries of faith.
Okay, but
so, I don't know. It's just there's a lot of bad will there, Jose. A lot of bad will.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, we're going to have a council first.
No, that's heresy. It's not backed up by anything. That's false, untrue, not backed up by anything. And so you blaspheme Jesus Christ by saying that people who deny him are in the church. You blaspheme Jesus Christ by saying that his church can teach that non-Catholics can receive Holy Communion. You blaspheme Jesus Christ by saying that all these facts about what is infallible teaching, okay, even though they clearly would apply to Vatican II, don't apply. That's just a lie. You bear false witness when you say that. And you have nothing to back it up just because you don't want to accept the truth. You'd rather just believe the lie than accept the truth. And so you will remain...
I don't see where you're getting that, because I just told you I reject most of those heretical things that you're talking about. I don't understand why you label me as that.
There are three reasons why you're a heretic. Three reasons. Number one, you believe in salvation outside the church.
I never even said that.
Yes, you said you believe Jews, etc., can be saved. You said they can't be saved. Here's what you said. They can't be saved except in the case of invincible ignorance, which means they can be saved. Okay? If you were honest, your end result position is they can be saved without faith in Christ. That's heresy. Okay? Heresy. Condemned heresy. Number two, you hold that a heretic is part of the church, because we discussed whether Benedict XVI's statements, according to which that the Orthodox are in the church, are heretical, you said yes. Does that make him a heretic? You basically said yes. Okay, but yet you still say he's part of the church. That's heresy. And number three, you deny infallibility. You deny papal infallibility because you hold that someone you think is a true pope can solemnly, with the fullness of his authority, promulgate heretical teachings. That's heresy.
No, you're the one that believes that.
No, I don't. You're just a liar. Damnable liar. That's what you are. I don't believe that at all. Okay, it's precisely because I believe the Pope is infallible, a true Pope, that I conclude he's not a Pope. He can't be. And then you contradict yourself completely when you said that only a council can declare someone a heretic. You have no authority to declare someone as a heretic. And then I pointed out, well, all these people at universities who deny the deity of Christ, deny Scripture, are they heretics? You said, well, yeah, because you can declare them heretics without a declaration, contradicting yourself, because the matters they deny were already addressed. Oh, and then I pointed out, well, Benedict XVI denies matters that were already addressed. The papacy, Protestantism, salvation, he denies all that. Therefore, by your own logic, he would have to be considered a heretic, but no. So you contradict yourself again. That's the truth. That's the truth, but you can't see it because you don't have the grace of faith or honesty.
Let me put my point, though, on this whole issue that's going on right now in the church. I think that, you know, all these things that the popes are saying are heretical, like you're saying, but however, I think God has a guard over the church, and he's keeping them from doing papal statements. He's keeping them from making stuff part of the faith, because I guarantee you all the stuff that's been going on, all the things they've been saying are not part of the faith. I can promise you that.
Well, you're just wrong. They're not part of the faith because they don't have authority. But if they did, they would be, because they have utilized that authority to teach. That's just the truth. That's absolutely proven by the facts I've given you. Only a liar would deny it, and that's what you are. And so your only hope is to start to pray, to look at the material, to really familiarize yourself with this stuff, but honestly, look at it honestly. And then you might begin to see what's going on. Because you have this misconception that because most people adhere to this phony structure under Benedict XVI, that it's the church. It's not. It's not. You look at the church in a very natural way rather than in a supernatural way. The church is governed by supernatural principles. It's a supernatural institution. Just because a guy dresses up in robes, okay, and people think he's Pope, doesn't mean he is. That's the deception, and that's why God has allowed this, because he wants to sift out people who really are inclined to believe his truth, who are inclined to follow God rather than a man who's denying God, but falsely claiming to do so in the name of God. So
what do you think I should do then?
I think you should pray the 15-decade rosary each day. I think you should look at our material, because you're obviously not very familiar with it. You may have quickly looked at some stuff. You haven't looked at much. That's pretty obvious. You need to watch the videos. Listen to some of our debates. Okay, watch the full-length video on their heresies. All right? Read some of the sections on the glossary of terms and principles about, you know, magisterium, what it is, papal infallibility. Read some of that stuff. Watch the whole video, The Third Secret of Fatima, The Imposter Sister Lucia, and The End of the World, and get to see how it all started with this invalid conspirator, John the 23rd, and how this entity that has arisen is not the Catholic Church. And so if you, I think, put more time into looking at what we have to say, because it's documented, not with our opinion, but by facts, then you'll start to see the truth, if you're sincere at all. But if you're going to listen to the putrid lies of someone like Voris, who's just full of nonsense, the guy, I mean, he's telling you the opposite of what the truth is, then you're going to be deceived. But if you spend more time looking at these videos and these articles and the documentation, and if you're sincere and if you pray for the truth, I think that there's a chance that you'll see that this is true. It is. But right now you have a very cloudy view of what the church is. And also, if you don't embrace the truth on salvation, you have no hope for seeing the truth. You're not convinced that Christ is necessary. This invincible ignorance idea you have is wrong. It's heretical. We have a book on that. It's not traditional. The church traditionally, the fathers of the church, okay, and the popes throughout history did not believe that people who are ignorant of the gospel can be saved. Do you realize that? It's a modernist idea. It's not the traditional teaching of the church. It's not the teaching of the saints. It's heretical. You have to know Christ. He's that necessary. You have to be baptized, okay? Baptism is necessary. There's only one way into the church, and that's through baptism. And so until you have what we call the foundational faith, the belief that Christ is really necessary, baptism is necessary, you won't really think it's a big deal that Benedict XVI is praising non-Christian religions. You'll say, well, it's, you know, maybe scandalous, but it's not that big a deal. Whereas if you really had the foundational faith in Christ, you would see that anyone who would do that is an antichrist. You'd never do that if you had the Catholic faith. The fact that they're praising these religions absolutely by itself proves they're outside the church. And so until you have that foundational faith, you won't see it. And also, a lot of people go by what other people say. If you care a lot about what other people say, you'll never serve God. You'll never find the truth, especially today. You have to look at the facts and not care at all what these heretics say, because the people you're probably being influenced by are just total liars. They've never found God. They're totally dominated by human respect, and that's why their conclusions on things are perverted and tainted. So that's what you need to do.
Okay, well, and so where would I be receiving my sacraments?
Well, you shouldn't receive sacraments yet. See, we hear this all the time from people. They just say, where do I go? Where do I go? You cannot receive the sacraments with benefit until you believe correctly. The first rule of salvation is to hold the true faith, whole and undefiled. So you should not receive sacraments. And if I were a priest, I wouldn't even give you communion. Until you believe correctly, until you've squared away these issues, that's what you need to do. And you need to care more about the faith. It's not just about where you show up at church or where you receive sacraments.
Okay, let me make my point on this. I think, honestly, that you have a lot of pride in yourself, and no matter what anybody says, you're going to try to come up with any document that you can and twist it to your own wording and make it make you sound right with basically that. And all I'm saying is I do understand that there's something wrong going on in the church, but however, we should, you and I both should stay in the church and fix it from within, because you and I, you know deep down inside that this is still a valid church. This is a valid priesthood. There's a valid...
No, it's not. I know absolutely it's not. And furthermore, you say I twist things. False statement. Give me an example. See, you can't just say stuff. And it's actually the opposite. What you said about me, that we just say anything to be right, it's what you just said. You just said something to be right you have no backing for whatsoever. That's a lie. That's because you're not of God.
No,
well, what I say is true, and yes, I have righteous indignation at people like you, because I can perceive so clearly how you resist the truth, probably much more clearly than you could ever imagine, that you are resisting the truth, and that's what I'm saying to you, and you can call it whatever you want. No, it's simply actually a charitable denunciation of your dishonesty. That's what it is. And so, but you're just a bad will, and the facts refute you. You don't know what you're talking about. You're a heretic. You contradict yourself all the time. You think you understand when you don't. The facts are there for you to embrace the truth. I've told you what you should do, and your conclusions are baseless. You don't even know what the church is. You're following the anti-church. You've actually left the church. That's the truth. And you are on the road to hell. And so...
Okay, well, you know, when I was... a few years ago, I was actually doing my confirmation classes, and that's whenever I started to become Catholic. And this is when I started learning about the faith, because before, I grew up more in a Baptist home, I would say. And when I started converting, that's when I started learning about the faith. And, I mean, they always taught that, you know, the church is infallible, the teachings of the church are infallible. And I think your points that you're making, okay, they are good points and everything, but you have to understand it to where, like, the papacy, you think that everything they're speaking of, even, you know, even if they're teaching heretical, you think automatically, okay, well, he's a heretic, so he's outside the church, boom. So, I mean, I don't think it goes down that easily. I think God is protecting his church a little bit harder than that. And I think that it's still there. I think there's going to be bad people all the way until the rapture happens. But I just think that these bad popes or whatever are going to lead people astray.
Well, this is why I said I think you need to read some of the facts, because what you're saying is just, I mean, you're saying that I think whoever's a heretic is outside the church, boom. That's Catholic teaching. Pope Innocent III said that there's one church, okay, not of heretics. As exemplo, okay? Leo XIII says, and I'll just quote it, think about what he's saying. The practice of the church has always been the same, as is shown by the unanimous teaching of the fathers, who were wont to hold as outside Catholic communion and alien to the church, which means outside the church, whoever would recede in the least degree from any point of doctrine proposed by her authoritative magisterium. And he goes on to quote Augustine, and he says, Augustine drew up a long list of heresies. St. Augustine notes that other heresies may spring up, to a single one of which, should anyone give his assent, he is by that very fact cut off from Catholic unity. No one who merely disbelieves in all these heresies can for that reason regard himself as a Catholic, or call himself one, for there may be or may arise some other heresies. And if anyone holds to one single one of these heresies, he is not a Catholic. End quote.
Okay.
That is Catholic teaching.
Okay, well, let me ask you this question. Why don't you go to or try your best to actually convert the old Catholic Church back to what it used to be or whatever? This church right now that you're talking about, that's a heretical Novus Order or whatever, why don't you try to reform this church back to the way it was before? And that's what I'm saying the solution is. You're saying your solution is break away, you know, get away from them.
Because it's not the Catholic Church. We try to bring people like you back to the Catholic Church. In that way, what you're saying is correct. But the church itself doesn't need to be converted. It can't be converted. It is the one true church. It is the faithful bride of Christ. It's just been reduced in number. That's all. And the chair is vacant. Just like when a pope dies, there's no pope reigning. The church doesn't cease to exist. So let's say you had in church history a pope, okay, and then he died. And then the chair of Peter's vacant. And then let's just suppose that during that time period when there was no pope, okay, before they could elect a new one, 90% of the faithful fell into heresy. What would happen? Well, the church would still exist, but it would only exist in that 10%. And there would be no pope.
Yeah.
That's similar to what has occurred.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm pretty sure you're familiar with what happened in Fatima, right? The apparition. And one of the things that the Virgin Mary told them is the true faith will always remain here in Portugal. I guarantee you that true faith that she's talking about accepts the papacy, and I guarantee you they're not part of your order of the set of vacantism.
Well, that's another flawed and baseless argument. She says, in Portugal, the dogma of faith will always be preserved, and then we have et cetera, because the third secret follows. So we don't even know what she said. And in fact, since the indications about what the third secret really contains are that it deals with an apostasy from the faith, okay, from seemingly the highest levels, actually what it could say is, in Portugal, the dogma of faith will always be preserved until the great apostasy, or in a faithful remnant, okay, or in those truly devoted to me. So that argument proves nothing. We can prove infallibly that this guy is not pope and that the structure under him is not Catholic. And so that's just the bottom line. You've seen enough facts to come to that conclusion, but you're not honest at this time. I hope you change. You can check out the information on the site, which you probably haven't looked at much, or the videos.
Okay, I'll check this over, and I'll be emailing you probably in another month or so, and we'll see. I'll be studying it, okay?
Okay. All right, Jose.
All right,
bye.
All right, bye.